he was still afar off, the father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. God only knows who first heard Jesus tell these three parables. Luke imagines two distinct audiences within earshot. There were the tax collectors and sinners who had come to listen to Jesus. And there was the religious establishment who had come to critique him. It was as though Luke anticipated the gathered church on any given Sunday. That day, according to Luke, as the critics grumbled about the company he was keeping, Jesus tells all of them three parables with curious odds. In the first, one of 100 sheep was lost. In the second, one of 10 coins was lost. And in the third, one of 2 sons was lost. In the first 2 stories, the main characters, the shepherd and the woman, search diligently, even frantically, for the one that was lost. In the third parable, the father simply waits and watches. On this fourth Sunday in the season of Lent, and in the midst of a series asking after the love that God is, the image of the shepherd who seeks until he finds it, the image of the woman who seeks until she finds it, searching on the dirt floor of her little Palestinian home for a lost coin. Both of those images are more compelling about what love is and does than the image of a father who watches and waits. Yet it is this third parable that invites us to discover something we have lost in our relationship with the love that waits for us. Consider first what we know of this father's love through his interaction with each son. With the younger son, the father acquiesces to Junior's demand for his inheritance. For months, even years, he watches down the road and waits for his return. This is no helicopter, father. When he spies him coming up the road, he has compassion. The Greek word is as though he feels from the depth of his bowels. And when he spies him coming up the road, he has compassion. He runs, puts his arm around him, kisses him, and tells the slaves to fit the son with a ring and a robe and a feast. Some would call him a permissive dad. Others, an unconditional lover. With the older son, like the shepherd and the woman, the father seeks him out, but can only plead with him to come back in the house. The elder son assumes the father to be a stern man who expects obedience and gives no praise. On this day, however, the father is almost tender with his elder son. He assures him of his presence and his generosity. He reasons with him, saying, "Son, we had to celebrate and rejoice because your brother was dead and he's alive. He was lost and found." Yet his only power is the power of persuasion. As Edward Schweitzer has said of him, he is the almighty, powerless father. Then he waits. older son on his shoulder rejoicing and take him home like the shepherd. He cannot drop the elder son in his pocket and take him to the party like the woman. Each son has a will. In the end, the father can only watch and wait for both lost sons to return. Say during stewardship season. Properly translated, the parable says that the father divided between his sons. was with his handing over of the inheritance, so it is with his receiving his son home. There are no conditions to his homecoming, no thought about punishment or payback. The love that waits is a love that receives all comers. Again, to impute Bart's words about God to the Father in the parable, there can be no question of disappointment or self-deception on the part of God with respect to the sincerely or insincerely, the sincerity or the insincerity of the human penitent for which he waits in patience. God is not short-sighted, nor is he subject to any optimistic illusions. He knows very well what is our frame. But because he knows it, he has good ground for being patient with us. What then of the elder son? You can say that the elder son experiences the father's patience as disregard. He has assumed that the time and space the Father has given him to develop his own existence reveals the Father's indifference to his obedience or his goodness or his responsible living. Therefore, he thinks of himself as literally a slave to his Father's unspoken expectations. There is no joyful obedience in what he does day after day. No doubt he has watched the father's indulgence of his brother's behavior. And assuming that love is a zero-sum game, concludes that there is nothing of the father's love or attention left over for him. This is the son that the father has lost. This is the son whose expectations of the father keep him from receiving the love that the Father has for him. If the younger son thought he was testing the Father's love by leaving, the elder son has been testing the Father's love by remaining, by refusing the time and space the Father's love has given him to develop his own existence, by silently critiquing the Father who has not loved him as he ought to be loved. The scene between the elder son and the father may well be the first time the son has dared to speak, to voice his harbored resentment at the father who has taken his faithful service for granted. I repeat, this is the son that the father has lost. This is the son whose expectations of the father keep him from receiving the love that the father has for him. All that the father can do is plead. Plead with him, comfort him, assure him, and then wait. Months, years, even a lifetime. We do not know what happens in the end, until it dawns on us that we are the child whose return will make or break concerning God's absence in the lives of those of us who have been nothing but faithful. In a word, we're the critics in the crowd. Now, in each of these parables, there is a party thrown by the main character. By the shepherd celebrating the return of the lost sheep, by the woman celebrating her finding the coin, and by the father, whose celebration of the youngest son's return will not be complete without the return of the elder son. God in Christ has come out of his home to watch for some to return from a far country and to plead with others who remain in the field pouting. Come to the feast, he says. The table is set. Some of us will come to receive the life he has given us with the tears of a penitent, grateful that he does not ask us where we have been or what we have been doing. Some of us will receive the life he is giving out of obligation and obedience, but as strangers to joy. Some of us will decline the invitation, believing ourselves to be unworthy. Others will overthink and so deny the actuality of the love that has awaited our return for years. No matter the reason, we are all within earshot of Christ's invitation this morning. Come to the feast, Jesus.